mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, did you know about this part of Hancock County history? This weekend, a memorial will be dedicated in honor of a group of World War II aviators who lost their lives in a training mission near Benton Ridge. We'll have the story. Also this morning, the ongoing fight against online misinformation and disinformation, with the election just 1 week away. And we're giving thanks in the month of November for all the exceptional outdoor spaces and opportunities of the Hancock Park District. Michelle Rumschlag will be here to tell us what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, October 29th, 2024. So time is running out for anyone who would like to vote by mail this year's general election. The deadline to request an absentee ballot in the state of Ohio is today. Those ballots must be completed and postmarked no later than November 4th in order to be counted. Election day, of course, 1 week from today, Tuesday, November 5th. But you have to make your request for an absentee ballot, mail-in ballot by today, and they need to be postmarked no later than Monday in order to be counted. More details on absentee and early in-person voting are posted at voteohio.gov. It says here over 1.5 million Ohioans have ballots turned in for the upcoming presidential election. The Secretary of State's office reports more than 740,000 people have returned absentee ballots and over 940,000 have voted early in person as of last night. So that is there's some pretty impressive numbers, folks, getting that out of the way. And if you are among those who are traditionalists like I am, wait until actual election day to cast my vote, and I go to my polling place. But this is good news for, if you're like that, if you're like me, this is good news for us, too, because it means probably shorter lines. We don't have to worry about that. And this has the potential to be one of those elections where you have lines. Probably going to be a big turnout this election go-around. Let's see, what is going on? Among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. You remember the Fat Bear contest that we had earlier this month, right? It was the beginning of October, the Fat Bear contest, the Katmai National Park in Alaska. Since that went so well, they're starting another contest. The Bureau of Land Management has hosted this online competition for 4 or 5 years now. It is folks being asked to vote on the cutest bat. The cutest bat. Bureau of Land Management has hosted the online competition since 2019 to raise awareness about the winged creature's ecological importance. And the contest runs through Halloween, so there is still time to vote for your favorite cute bat. Some of the competitors in this year's field: Robert Battinson, Bat Damon, Battler Swift, Sir Flaps-a-Lot, Harry Potter, and Honey Bunches of Myotis. Okay. Last year's winner was William Shakespeare, which is a female Townsend's big-eared bat from Southern Oregon. So I don't have the website here for the cutest bat contest, but I would imagine if you Google the Bureau of Land Management's cutest bat contest, it should come right up. I can't imagine that there are too many Google results that would confuse you on that. You should be able to find it without any problem. You want to vote for the cutest bat by Halloween. So, in the tradition of the Fat Bear contest, there is the latest. Need to let you know about these things. Very, very important. You know how McDonald's been in the news, that E. coli outbreak, and all of the lawsuits have been filed against McDonald's now for making like so many people sick with their quarter pounders. They found that now they're saying they're pretty confident it's not the beef in the quarter pounder sandwiches. It is the onions that were the source of the E. coli outbreak. So the quarter pounders are back on the menu this week in places where they had been pulled. They're just serving them without onions, at least for the time being. But they're facing lawsuits over this, and they are not the only ones. This is not because of the E. coli thing or anything, but I saw this on the Newswire this morning. Subway is facing a lawsuit accused of grossly misleading customers over the amount of meat in their sandwiches. It's a class action that says advertisements for the fast food chain show steak and cheese sandwiches containing 200% more meat than what customers actually receive. I know, it's a shocker. In the commercials, they exaggerate the amount of meat in the sandwich. I had no idea. This is a shocker to me. It's never happened that the advertisements might overemphasize something. I mean, come on, really? The lawsuit was filed yesterday in Brooklyn federal court. The woman who is suing is seeking unspecified damages for all New Yorkers who bought the sandwiches in the last 3 years. The lawsuit alleges Subway violated the state's consumer protection laws. So, yeah. Okay. I know, it's a shocker that the advertisement might not be 100% honest. So Subway facing a lawsuit there. And speaking of fast food, this is kind of interesting. If you are dining out, you're going to a fast food joint, there's an interesting, I guess it's kind of a survey. There's a questionnaire. They put this out there to DoorDash drivers, asking how the fast food chains stack up. This is according to delivery drivers and customer complaints. Some DoorDash drivers admit that quite often they will not take orders from Panera Bread. Why? Because they take too long to fill orders. That's a main complaint for Panera Bread. That's one. Taco Bell, filled with complaints, many complaints from Taco Bell regarding incorrect or missing items in takeout or to-go orders, delivery or takeout orders. One DoorDash driver says McDonald's has a habit of packaging food and drinks in the same container, meaning that your hot fries and your hot burgers are chilled by the ice cold drinks, or vice versa. The drinks are made warm by the warm items that are placed next to them. So it's not good for either. So that is a common complaint from McDonald's. And when it comes to pizza, apparently Papa John's is the one that generates the most complaints. Customers report receiving soggy pizzas. And it says here they believe it's because of the cardboard box and the pent-up steam from the pizza product. But don't they all deliver in cardboard boxes? I mean, so why is Papa John's so susceptible to this? But apparently that's the one that people complain the most of. Anyway, those are the chains. If you're thinking of ordering delivery or takeout, those are the ones most often are complained about. So now you know. You know what to expect. You know what to avoid. And lastly, here among the first things that you need to know on this Tuesday morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. The next time your kids are out playing in the dirt, getting dirty, just let them have at it. New data finds that playing in the dirt and the mud could help kids build their immune system. Now, some people have said this for years, that we are just too obsessed with keeping our kids clean and they're not building up their immune system. And apparently there is something to that. Data on the connection between dirty play And the probability of contracting allergies and autoimmune diseases has found that dirt and mud expose children to microorganisms to help them with immune training. Researchers say exposure to an array of microbes teaches a child's immune system to differentiate destructive microbes versus mild ones. Children, they say, who are not exposed to this kind of immune training could have overly sensitive immune systems, which can lead to allergies or a higher risk of viral sickness. This type of play also helps brain development because it is sensory. It is sensory play that triggers multiple senses, such as touch and smell and all of that. So there are those benefits as well. But I just thought that was interesting. Apparently, research now backs this up, what some people have been saying for years, that this obsession that we have, keeping our kids from getting dirty, is actually a bad thing. Let them get dirty. Let them play in the mud. Let them enjoy all of that stuff. Because in the end, not only is it not harmful for them, it actually apparently is helpful. So there you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, partly cloudy and windy today with a high around 80. Partly cloudy, windy tonight, a low in the mid-60s. An officer-involved shooting in Findlay is under investigation by the Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigation. The Findlay Police Department says officers were dispatched to Bernard Park Monday night on the report of three juveniles consuming alcohol. Police say during their investigation, one of the juveniles fled on foot and an officer pursued. During the foot pursuit, police say the juvenile suspect shot at the pursuing officer. The pursuing officer returned fire, striking the juvenile. Officers on scene immediately rendered first aid, and the juvenile was taken to Blanchard Valley Hospital and later to a Toledo hospital in critical but stable condition. Get more in this story on our website. Women's Resource Center of Hancock County has announced the launch of its Rise Up Capital campaign with the goal of raising $3 million to expand services and enhance support for families in need throughout Findlay and beyond. The campaign has already secured 65% of its fundraising goal, raising just over $1.95 million so far. The funds will support new initiatives, building expenses, foundational support, and an endowment to ensure the long-term sustainability of the organization. Get more in the story on our website. Flags are at half-staff, and a memorial service will be held this week for a woman from Findlay who made history in the Ohio legislature.
Joanne Davidson served as Speaker of the Ohio House of Representatives from 1995 to 2000. She is the only woman to serve in that position and replaced Vern Reif, who was Speaker for 20 years. Davidson's political career spanned 60 years and included time on both a local city council and at the State House. She was an advocate for encouraging Republican women to serve in office. Governor Mike DeWine called her a model public servant. A memorial is planned for Thursday. Davidson was 97.
ONN's Jay Plyburn reporting. Findlay City Schools is reminding students and parents that there will be no school for students on Wednesday as staff dives into professional development and safety drill training. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
So this is a really interesting part of Hancock County history that you may never have heard of before. This weekend, there will be a memorial dedicated in honor of a group of World War II aviators who were tragically killed in a training mission near Benton Ridge. And it is our cover story this morning. Rob Tong is with us. He's been on the show a number of times. We've had him here. He's a local historian, curator of the Love Findlay History Facebook page, as we've talked about before. And I know this is something you've been working on for quite a while, to get this memorial put into place.
Yeah, I mean, for years, probably 13 to 15 years, yeah. I've talked about, man, we should really do something for these guys. And this year I finally did.
It's really an interesting story that I'm not sure how many people, before you started to get out there and make this better known, how many people were aware of. Because when you think casualties of World War II in Hancock County, Ohio, That's a surprise. I mean, the war was not fought in Hancock County, Ohio.
Right. But. Well, this training mission was actually November 1st of 1941. So you're talking roughly a month before Pearl Harbor, where we entered the war.
Yeah.
But everybody knew at the inevitably point, was going to be taking place.
Yeah.
These guys were flying out of Dayton at Wright-Patterson Field. Mm-hmm. They took off in the morning. They headed up towards Michigan, and they were on their way back to Wright-Patterson.
So just a routine training mission.
Yeah, they were testing new experimental flight equipment.
Okay.
They don't really 100% know what happened, but probably icing for the weather at that time. It busted through the clouds real, real low. Mm-hmm. It went into full throttle trying to gain altitude, and it ended up going down in a cornfield just outside of Bent Ridge, and the amount of fuel that was in the wings created a large air pocket, I guess you would say, and they think that those vapors, when it was sliding across the field, caused it to explode, and when it blew up, it created like a 15 to 20 foot crater.
Wow.
And just disintegrated the whole plane.
Yeah. It really is a tragic story, but a fascinating one, and reminds us that not all of those who gave their lives in service to their country, and it's still true today, not all of those individuals are ones who actually die in battle. I mean, in this case, this was a training mission. They were testing out aircraft that would go on to be a big part of the Allied force in World War II.
Yeah, this was a B-25B model.
Okay.
There was a little over 1,000 of these ever produced.
Mm-hmm.
It was 120 of these that were produced, and then they made various model upgrades, which created multiples after that.
Yeah, that were based on this.
But the B-25 Mitchell bomber was named after General Billy Mitchell.
Okay.
I was distantly related to him, which is really, really cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. But they believe it's the only aircraft in military history that was named after a person.
Hmm.
He, in World War I, was actually one of the guys that said aviation's going to change the way wars are fought.
And indeed, that turned out to be
and
the case.
He even forecasted Pearl Harbor before it happened. He later got court-martialed by the United States government. And then years later, after he was gone, the president of the United States said, hey, Billy Mitchell was right.
Yeah.
And they took back everything they said.
Interesting. So talk a little bit about this memorial and honoring these individuals. By the way, none of them from Hancock County. These were all from other places around the country.
Yeah. There was a couple Ohio guys that lived down near Wright-Patterson, but three of the guys were Air Corps, full-blown military, from Nevada. They were all over. And they were just on their job. But basically, I hate to say it, but lots of people in today's world are removing memorials. And it's nice to actually put one up to honor these.
Yeah.
The crash didn't take place in Bent Ridge Park, but we figured with the thousands of kids that are playing sports over there, let's put the memorial up in the park.
Yeah, that would be an appropriate place.
This way, every weekend, you've got 15 to 2,000 kids that'll learn a little bit of history behind it.
Mm-hmm.
But what's really, really cool, and it was hard to do, is I've tracked down several of the families whose ancestors were killed on this plane that day. And they'll be coming in from out of state to honor their ancestors, which is
awesome. That's awesome. Yeah.
It's truly awesome.
I would imagine when you reach out to these individuals and the families of these individuals to say, hey, we want to honor your loved one's sacrifice. This is kind of a forgotten story because we don't typically pay attention to these types of stories. It doesn't seem as glamorous as a battlefield mission.
The I guess you would say the technical aspects of the aircraft, the safety of the aircraft from that time frame wasn't what it was today.
Sure.
So you had this bomber that killed five people outside of Bent Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
You had another bomber pilot get killed just west of Macomb. You had another bomber go down off 6th Street in Findlay that killed three more. Hmm. You had another bomber that went down by Fostoria.
We don't know these stories. That's really surprising to hear about all of these these stories. So dedication of the memorial at the park will be held on Saturday. Is that right?
Right. So what it is Saturday at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Almost the anniversary. But
yeah, so it would be close. The anniversary within one day.
Yeah.
But Saturday at 10 o'clock in the morning, we'll meet over at Benton Ridge Park.
Okay.
There's a wonderful parking lot right there, very easy access to the memorial.
Mm-hmm.
I'll start a program and presentation, meeting and greeting and talking to the various and telling what took place. And then at 10:30, we'll have the flyover. The American National Anthem will be sung, and we're going to have a full-size World War II bomber just like this.
That's
flying over.
That's the really cool part, is that, as you said, there weren't too many of these that were ever made.
Right.
Even fewer, obviously, that are still airworthy today.
Right.
But you've tracked one down.
Yeah, we've got one coming from Urbana. And believe it or not, it's hard to get people to get their World War II bombers out. and it's very expensive.
Yeah.
But with the help of Great Lakes Toyota Subaru, Cauldron Crates, Jack Crates did a lot when it came to getting the actual memorial and the stone cut.
Mm-hmm.
Without those guys, it wouldn't have been possible. I also got a lot of money from just people in Hancock County that made this worthwhile for us.
Yeah.
But after the plane flies over at Benton Ridge, we'll all come to Findlay Airport. So roughly, let's say from 11 till 3:30,
okay.
The bomber will land at Findlay Airport, and it will be there for everybody to see. For like a $5 donation, you'll actually be able to go into the bomber.
Very cool.
I've got two large displays of nothing but World War II Air Corps-related uniforms and stories and equipment that will be on display at the airport. And this is free to the public.
Okay.
So really, really a very, very cool way to remember our history.
Absolutely. So the dedication is at 10 o'clock at Benton Ridge Park on Saturday.
Saturday the 2nd.
And then after that at the Findlay Airport until about 3.
The engines will probably fire up around 3:30, and they hope to leave by 4.
Well, that'd be pretty cool to watch, too.
Yeah, so, and to see and be able to touch and get to one of these bombers is just absolutely amazing. And it's a great way to remember our past.
Absolutely. We have a link on our webpage for more information about the fly-in, the flyover, the memorial dedications. You can go to goodmornings.net. And once again, Rob Tong with us this morning, the curator of the Love Findlay History Facebook page, and just a fascinating story and long overdue recognition for these folks from World War II.
Yeah, and it's really a very cool story. It's a sad story, but I'm even going to have pieces of the airplane there for people to see.
Wow.
The pictures of who these people were, and it'll just bring a little bit of history back to Hancock County.
Something worth checking out. Rob, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
So how do you get the news and information you rely on to make decisions like who to vote for? With the election right around the corner now, Americans want to be informed, but is information overload kind of taking us down a potentially dangerous rabbit hole? A recent report by the Pew Research Center reveals almost 4 in 10 Americans say they often come across made-up news and information, and I would venture to guess that there are probably more who have and maybe just haven't realized it. Wendy Bounds is with us this morning. She is an award-winning journalist, speaker, and author whose career and writing spans multiple media brands like The Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, New York Times, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You call it, Wendy, information anxiety.
Yes, Chris, good morning. You took the words right out of my mouth. That is how I think about it, and you've really set us up well for this conversation. And I think in particular, as we are headed toward the November 5th election, people are feeling this information anxiety more than ever. It's quite acute. And they are seeing just information hurled at them from the candidates consistently. And much of it is quality information, like you have at WFIN. But some of it is not. And some of it is dangerously wrong. And we have new data out today from Smart News, which is a news aggregator app where I work, showing that 85% of Americans are concerned about attempts to mislead voters leading up to the election. 85%.
That's
a very powerful number.
It is. And I'm wondering if this is one of those things, though, that people are concerned about other. You ask people if they're good drivers, they say, "Yeah, I'm a great driver. It's all the other idiots out there on the road. It's never ourselves." Now, I wonder how much of that is kind of the same sort of phenomenon going on here, that people are concerned about everybody else falling for false information, but we ourselves believe that we're immune from it.
You know, I'm going to give Americans credit here. I think Americans are very smart, and I think Americans have a sense when they are being misled. In some ways, it's very important to think about where we're getting the most important information about something that's so critical, which is our right to vote in this country. Traditional media sources like yours are a good place to start. At Smart News, we curate information from hundreds of publishers, but we vet those publishers before they come in for accuracy and reliability. And we have teams of trust and safety analysts and journalists looking through and combing for misinformation every day, because I do think it is something that is it's not political in this sense. In the sense, when I say not political, it means that both Republicans and Democrats are equally concerned about misinformation from our findings, Chris.
I want to make sure that we are clear here. This is not a condemnation of online news sources. I mean, certainly it's much easier for an online source to propagate misinformation or disinformation, but that doesn't necessarily mean that all online news sources are bad. Because I don't want to come across as saying that, oh, we're a legacy type of news organization, so we're automatically better, because people will take that as just we're worried about competition.
So I don't work at a legacy news organization. I work at a technology company. I have worked at legacy news organizations, and I think you're teeing up something that's super important, which is that there's a lot of good that has come from the digital revolution and from social media. It lets us share ideas. It lets the candidates connect more directly mm-hmm. with voters. It just means we have to be more hyper-vigilant, all of us. That is our responsibility in looking out for some of this misinformation. And I do think, by and large, and I've worked at traditional media outlets on both sides of the political spectrum in terms of their editorial philosophies. And I will say that across the board, there are apparatuses in place to actually look for things that are incorrect, to find things and to fact check them. And that's important to remember with something, again, that is crucial as our right to vote. And when people are coming up and on the day of the elections, I want people to be very cognizant when they might hear something that says, oh, you know what, the polls in your area are all closed. You can't go to vote. The traffic jams are so bad. Be suspicious of that, right? Yeah. That's what I'm asking. I know that's what you're leading to, too, Chris.
Yeah. And it's interesting. You talk about knowing the difference between what is real and what is fake. That's getting much more difficult these days in an era of artificial intelligence and generative AI and things of that nature. The technology, as it advances, makes it a lot easier for those with an agenda and absolutely no scruples to pass along misinformation or disinformation. How do we spot it, or is it even possible?
I look at it as it is possible, and I look at it as defense and offense. On the defensive side, I think of the FACs, the facts without the T. F, are you seeing a fake expert out there? Are you seeing somebody pretend that they have a lot of knowledge about a topic where they have no background in it? That's a warning sign. A, angry. Is it content designed to make you feel angry? That is yet another tactic that's often used. And also C, conspiracy. A lot of misinformation is wrapped in conspiracy theories. So these are the things you should have a gut check about, and should think about fact checking that. How do you go about fact checking these things? The good news is, with a very little bit of time, there are free websites out there like PolitiFact.com, USA Today, Fact Check, AP Fact Check, the News Literacy Project. All of these things are right there, and they are free for people to test and to see what they're hearing and seeing, and to find out how valid it is, Chris.
That is such an important point, fact-checking and doing your own legwork on this. And I thought it was interesting. We referenced the Pew Research report. About 4 in 10 say that they have come across fake news and information. And that same report found like two-thirds or three-fourths of people have fact-checked. And it kind of made me wonder, they may believe that they are fact-checking, but are they doing that the right way? Or are we falling into the trap of confirmation bias, just looking for other sources to confirm the same thing that we already believe?
You know, confirmation bias will always be an issue. And I think it's something that we all look, we have to take responsibility, and we have to ask ourselves if that's what we're doing. Are we falling into the trap of confirmation bias? One thing that was really striking to me, Chris, is that there's some key differences seen between the generations. You're looking at nearly three quarters of baby boomers who are really concerned about misinformation, but only about a third of Gen Zers are. And Gen Z is that digital, those digital natives, right? They're in their teens and early 20s. And so there's a big gap here. And I think as a society, we have a responsibility to try and close that gap by helping educate people on what, you know, how they can actually seek out forms of truthful information.
And I think that's where a lot of the aggregators, as you're mentioning, was Smart News, where you work, I think is important, because this is a way of maybe instilling that trust in the younger generations. It seems like the older generations, who again grew up with the legacy media and understanding the power of good, solid journalism, the younger generations who haven't grown up with that background maybe can't appreciate. So that's one of the things where I think the news aggregators become very important.
We bring in a news from all sorts of perspectives. And again, I think Gen Zers, as you're wisely noting, they want to look beyond just a single source of information. And that's what you can get in an aggregator like ours, where, again, we're working constantly so that our algorithms know how to recognize quality. But we also, again, have that very important human conscious, human backstop to it. So again, teams of people who are trained to be on the lookout for this, so that hopefully we can provide an avenue for this younger generation to come in and to consume factually reliable, accurate information.
It is a whole new world, but not one that is without pitfalls. And well, it's something we always have to be cognizant about, especially we're talking about things that are as consequential as major election, presidential elections, and really even on down to the state and even local levels, to be honest. Again, Wendy Bounds is with us this morning. Again, Smart News is the aggregator that you are a part of. Where do folks find that?
Smart News can be downloaded from any app store. It's there for iOS and also for Android. And Chris, I would also give a shout out to the News Literacy Project, where people can go again and learn more.
Wendy, thanks very much for taking the time for us this morning. We appreciate it.
Have a good day, Chris.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Just in time for Halloween, officials in Southern California are reminding the public about a law that carries stiff penalties for violators. Signs have been posted up and down Hollywood Boulevard, the Sunset Strip, and other parts of Southern California, reminding people that silly string is prohibited. That's right, silly string is against the law. It is prohibited specifically on October 31st, Halloween, and on November 1st. You can't use silly string. It's against the law in Southern California to fire off any silly string. The product can cause thousands of dollars in property damage, they say, to businesses, cars, and the famous Hollywood Walk of Fame stars. The stars along the Hollywood Walk of Fame can be damaged by silly string. They will have none of it. Anyone who is caught using silly string during these prime Halloween hours faces a not-so-silly penalty of up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. They're not messing around. A silly string. Say it's. It may seem like a silly law, but it is there for a reason. So if you're going to Southern California anytime soon, leave your silly string at home. It is not welcome there. Elsewhere in the broken news this morning, over 22, we've had over the years a lot of unusual thefts. People stealing weird things that most of us would not even imagine of stealing. And here is another one. Over 22 tons of cheddar cheese has disappeared from Neil's Yard Dairy in the UK, according to a news report. 22 tons of cheddar cheese. How do you make off with 22 tons of cheese? The store claimed in an Instagram post that the theft was carried out by someone who posed as a legitimate wholesale distributor for a major French retailer. And they were there to buy 22 tons of cheddar cheese. Unfortunately, the store discovered the scam after 950 wheels of cheddar had been delivered, had been absconded. 950 Neil's Yard Dairy says it's working with law enforcement and urges cheesemongers around the world to report suspicious cheddars to their... They have an email address that they have set up. They think this is going to be sold on the black market internationally? Apparently so. They ask you to, if you encounter any suspicious cheddar, email them at info@neilsyarddairy.co.uk. You encounter any suspicious cheddar, we'll be on the lookout for that. And he said, how do you offload 22 tons of cheese? I mean, and why, how do you hide that? I mean, that can't be easy to hide 22 tons of cheddar cheese. We're looking for someone who is extremely regular. In other broken news this morning, an Iowa man is being charged after allegedly trying to strangle his mother with the American flag. Now, we can't make this up. Police say 39-year-old Adam Sotson showed up at his mother's home in Cedar Rapids last week, intoxicated. Imagine that. There's some intoxicating intoxicating substance involved here. Mr. Sotson showed up at his mother's home in Cedar Rapids last week, intoxicated and upset about some sort of dispute in the past. So apparently they had a longstanding beef, the two. And prosecutors say he rolled a 3x5 American flag into a rope and tried to strangle her with it. Strangle her with the American flag. That's... apparently, Ms. Sotson's mother's boyfriend intervened and no one was seriously hurt. Mr. Sotson has been charged with assault, harassment, and DUI. Because he had to get there. He was intoxicated and he drove to his mother's house. Can you charge him with desecration of the flag? I don't know. Trying to strangle someone with the American flag. Seriously? Wow. That's a first. I don't know that I've ever had one of those stories in the broken news. Did you hear about this? Some years ago, you remember the story about the piece of art this this artist created. Maurizio Catalan is his name. Created a work of art. It was basically a banana duct taped to a wall. Do you remember this story? You remember this artist, I use artist, put artist in air quotes here, who created a work that he calls Comedian. And it is a banana duct taped to a wall. Well, now it is up for sale. The banana duct tape to the wall is up for sale and could fetch as much as $1.5 million when it goes on the auction block next month. The piece consists of banana duct tape to a wall. According to the New York Post, before you pull out your checkbook and run to Sotheby's in New York City to bid on the creation, you should note that you will not get the original banana and is not included in the auction, the original banana. Instead, as a matter of fact, you won't receive a finished work of art at all. Instead, the winner of the auction will receive a certificate of authenticity, giving them the right to display the work and instructions on how to recreate it. You have to, it's like a paint by numbers kind of thing. Well, sort of. It's a duct tape by numbers. You'll get a new banana and a roll of duct tape and instructions on how to display, recreate the work of art. And seriously, this is a serious auction. It could go for $1.5 million. Art critics and art experts say the physical representation of the work known as Comedian is not in the work itself, but rather the questions it poses about what actually constitutes art. All right. I don't know. The whole thing, once again, leaves me wondering, why didn't I think of that? I mean, why didn't... And here I thought that I could not be an artist because I have no artistic ability whatsoever. And yet, come to find out, it doesn't take any artistic ability whatsoever. You can duct tape a banana to the wall. You can be a million-dollar selling artist, as it turns out. And finally, in the broken news, I want to meet the person who shells out $1.5 million for that. That's what I want. And finally, in the broken news this morning... This is a crazy story that I saw recently on the Newswire. A pilot making his last flight before retiring had to put all of his 46 years of experience to the test when the plane that he was flying suffered a malfunction to the landing gear as he was approaching Anchorage, Alaska. Doug Ferguson went through the entire landing checklist and flew over Ted Stevens Airport to give the ground crew a look at the problem when the landing gear, when indications of the cockpit were the landing gear did not deploy correctly. So he flies over the airport, gave the ground crew a chance to look and inspect the landing gear. Then he warned the passengers on the plane that the landing might be a little bit bumpy. But then he... managed to successfully and safely bring the plane in for a landing. Airport officials say Mr. Ferguson's skilled handling of the emergency avoided what could have been a more serious outcome. And that's the way, and it was his last flight before retiring. His last flight. Now that's the way to go out with a bang. That's pretty impressive. There you go. I am having a feeling that maybe some of his passengers say, well, this is my last flight, too. I'm not gonna do this again. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
This is Ed Lance with OSU Extension. It's harvest season. Drivers will be sharing roads with combines and grain hauling vehicles. Please be alert, especially on roads with limited visibility. Watch out for equipment pulling in and out of fields. Drivers and farmers, let's work together this fall to keep our roads safe and accident-free.
This message from WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Daylight saving time is coming to an end this weekend, and the clock-changing freakout has already begun. In a new survey of 2,000 Americans, 40% say they feel a sense of dread when preparing to fall back. A sense of dread. That sounds pretty extreme. It is a feeling, what is interesting about this, it's a feeling that lasts much longer than just the day or two before or after the time change. This sense of dread that 40% of Americans feel actually sets in about 11 days prior to the time change, so around October 23rd this year. So if somebody feels a little edgy, a little like they're on edge, that may be what's going on. Moreover, people will not get over the end of daylight saving time for about 13 days, which would be November 16th before we are fully adjusted. The survey also found, and this is probably not a surprise, that given the chance, 59% of Americans would permanently stop the twice yearly time change. And older generations are more eager to do so because, you know, we're grumpy old people. It just makes us grumpy. While only half of millennials would choose to end daylight saving time permanently, two-thirds of baby boomers, 69%, say it is time to pick one time and stick with it. Which sounds like a very baby boomer thing to say. Just pick one time and stick with it. Just pick one. One-third of respondents, 35% in the survey, believe that the trade-off of getting an extra hour of sleep on one night versus less light in the evenings for several months is worth it. 35% actually believe that it's better to trade off an extra hour of one night for months of no light in the evening? I don't know. That was surprising to me. 77% of those in the survey say they feel more energized when the sun is out. And working Americans especially miss the daylight. 54% in the survey admit experiencing the sunlight blues after the time change because it seems like we're at work during all the hours of the daylight. We go to work when it's dark. We go home when it's dark. Waste all of the sunlight while we're at work. A fifth of respondents in the survey, 21%, said changing the clocks harms their sleep schedule, and 37% say they need more sleep in the days or weeks after the time change. Again, this is not a surprise, but what I did find interesting is that on average, those in the survey say they need an extra hour and 24 minutes in order to feel well-rested after the time change. So when we lose an hour, when we shift our clocks by an hour, it takes us an extra hour and 24 minutes of extra sleep in order to feel well-rested. So that's kind of odd, I thought. Joining us now to talk about what's going on in the month of November, the Hancock Park District. Michelle Rimschlag is with us in the studio. As we said a little bit earlier, we're giving thanks in the month of November for all of the exceptional outdoor spaces that we have.
We do. We're very blessed. And I'm not originally from the area, so I'm from Michigan, and mm-hmm. so was living in New York and wanted to...
We don't hold that against you.
Yes, I know. It's okay. I live here. I'm not from... Yeah. Yeah. But people are just like, you know, what great parks, or they move into the area, or realizing even surrounding counties don't have, mm-hmm. you know, we didn't have, like, growing up, anything like this back home. Yeah. So it's definitely...
One of the things that I always love, and we've talked about this before, every park is just a little bit different. I mean, there's such a wide variety of settings and different things at the various parks.
Right. So, I mean, you can go out to Riverbend, obviously, and do, you know, your shelters in your volleyball, and you're on the river, where Litzenberg, you've got your history, and they've mm-hmm. got all, you know, a lot of places have... you know, different kinds of paths and different habitats, and even within one park. I mean, Oakwood, think about your different habitats that you can visit.
You go out to, like, Arrowland, mm-hmm. Which is the newest park. You just get very open, pleasy kind of...
And if you want something quiet, so, like, you know, it's not... Oakwood's, Riverbend, Litzenberg, those are our big popular three. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I always tell people to, like, go someplace different. I know mm-hmm. everybody's got their favorite.
Yeah.
But go somewhere different that you can... You know, try new paths, and mm-hmm. that's one that, there's not that many visitors, so if you're looking for kind of a more of a quiet escape to the parks, And I guess also want to remind people with our Hike It program still going on through the end of November. There's more information on our website, HancockParks.com. And I got Airland on there, but again, it's maybe getting people going, okay, a little out of their comfort zone. Let's go visit some, not just our parks, but we also include some of the village parks and the Finley and Foster Area reservoirs.
Terrific outdoor spaces to enjoy. And still, you know, the winter time is a great time. Fall and winter are a great time to get out to the parks, too.
Right, so. Right. We don't really slow down. I mean, maybe a little bit with our programming. Of course, summer is a lot of our summer camps and fall. Definitely very busy with programming and school program stuff. But, yeah, we keep it year-round for
absolutely
public program. And, of course, you know, you don't have to visit a program to go to the park. We're right. open every day, dawn till dusk, you know. And so, yeah, I mean.
Of course, dawn to dusk this time of year is that's a more compressed time frame.
It is short,
when it
yes.
is in the middle of the summer. But it is still. And we were talking a little bit earlier about how people go through that sunshine withdrawal. That is right. a real thing during the wintertime. Here's a chance to get out and get your fix of sunshine, your vitamin D infusion.
Right. Yeah. You kind of have to get outside. And, you know, I mean, what a great time, even after like the fall. So in November, you know, all of your leaves have fallen and stuff, but it's not cold. There's probably not snow yet, which some people don't like, but you don't have the heat. You don't have the insects.
Right.
I mean, so there's some of those things.
You get
that,
a different views, different experience.
Right, and things. So it's always great to, you know, hit different parks at different times.
So what's going on in the month of November? Wrapping up the fall floats, I know, very soon.
So this weekend is the last weekend for that.
Okay.
And so, again, the floats are offered at 1 o'clock on Saturday and Sunday. But you have to pre-register for them. So you have to get online or stop by the office. And it's we have single kayaks and canoes available. So it's basically $10 a person for the single and then $10 for the canoe, but it's double occupancy. So just our normal special float option. Of course, start at Zonon Landing. It's self-guided. You go upriver, come back. It's 2 hours. But we just need you to sign up by Friday at 1 o'clock so that we know we're not just there and hope people show up like we are in the summertime. This is something you do have to pre-register for. And it's Friday afternoon for both Saturday and Sunday.
Okay. So Friday is the deadline. And by the way, you can do that online.
Website. HancockParks.com. Okay. And then if people have been, because the weather has been really nice, then sometime next week, the docks will be coming out. So we still have them at Riverside and then at East Point. Not that you can't get in the water, but you won't have the ease or a nice kayak.
Right.
So those will be removed soon.
Make
after
note that.
Of that. For winter, and then, of course, before we know it, Memorial Day weekend, we'll be here to open up again.
We'll be able to talk about that again. What else is going on in the month of November, things to highlight in the coming weeks?
Well, we've got a program coming up for our middle schoolers on Wednesday, November 6th. It's called The Art of Weaving. And so this is going to take place at the Discovery Center at Oakwoods Nature Preserve in the evening at 6 o'clock. We don't need, there's no cost, but we would like you to register sometime that afternoon. And so you're going to be talking about kind of the history of weaving, the tools, going to be doing some, creating your own simple loom out of cardboard and then making different things. Who hasn't done that? I did that, right? I don't know. Tim Clayman is doing this program. Everybody did it, right? Out of shoebox.
Okay.
And you put the, you know, at least it's, maybe it's just a girl thing. And you would weave and make like a little pseudo blanket that, you know, Barbie could lay on. I don't know. It's just the thing that everybody, I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe it was of the time that we did. So, so again, no cost. Just need you to register Wednesday, November 6th, The Art of Weaving.
All right. Anything else to highlight coming up in the month of November?
Well, we'd love you to come back out to the McInnes House at Litzenberg on Sunday, November 17th. It's our monthly open house, and November's topic is late fall day on the farm.
Okay.
And so, of course, our open houses are 1 to 4, no cost, you just show up. And so we're going to be talking about, you know, most things would have been harvested or the last would have been harvested, and then what are they doing kind of to get ready for winter.
Yeah.
You know, of course, they're storing all their food. You know, how are they doing that, and just what kind of chores and things are they doing before the snow comes? Because they didn't know when the snow comes.
Right.
And the weathermen back then.
And they didn't have refrigerators and freezers and all of that. So
Right. Would have used ice blocks, would have used straw, obviously had like a cellar type of thing under the house.
Yeah.
And then all of your drying, pickling, salting, and that kind of stuff.
All of that would have been very, very important.
Right. And so just talking about that. And then, of course, we always have food cooking. It's cool enough to have the cook stove going, which I like. So mm-hmm. it creates your heat and you can cook on it. So we're going to be having some different baked squash and some pumpkin cookies. And I think we're going to have some onions. I think we're making some onion soup.
Okay.
So on the stove. So, again, stop on by. And again, if you've never been out, which I guess there's people out there. I mean, with the McInnes house, it's 1847, and we are, it's first person interpretation. So we are dressing,
you've
looking,
got a
talking.
Living history.
Right. We are talking to you like it's over 175 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the McInneses were real people.
Yeah.
Mary and Charles were real. The characters, I portray Mrs. Margaret Boylan, and they were pioneers here in the mid 1800s with the McInneses.
Yeah.
And so, you know, giving you real information of how life would have been like back then.
And by the way, that is an open house. You don't have to register for that. You can come out anytime. That is the 17th?
That's the 17th from 1 until 4. So I know it's going to get darker a little bit earlier, right? Because our time changed before we know it. It's going to be happening.
Right.
And so we're falling back and obviously get those darker hours
I'll tell you what. If you want to put yourself in the mind of Thanksgiving and all of the things to be thankful for, go to one of those events, one of those open houses, and kind of get an idea of what life was like back in the pioneer days, and you really put some perspective on the way we enjoy life
and
today.
And maybe appreciate different things. I like it because it was very basic. It was just living.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's hard to imagine all of it that they would have day in out, but it would be like, okay, today we're going to bake. Mm-hmm. And that's where they, you know, they're not running kids to practice and doing things. It's surviving. So I like the basicness of that. I wouldn't give up my modern medicine. I don't want to do that. Margaret had 11 children, and they all lived to adulthood. So I don't know how. I mean, there were midwives and things, and obviously they did what they could back then. But that's one thing that I won't want to. I don't want to.
It's funny. I used to say, I used to make the joke that we didn't have kids so much as my wife and I breed domestic help. But that's kind of what they did in the pioneer days.
I mean,
everybody pitched in. Everybody was part of this.
So. Well, and you think of, I mean, it's running the farm. It's having the animals and the food. You grew your food. You didn't go down to Walmart or Meijer to buy it. They might not have had money. So it would have been,
very selfish.
And you're making all, you don't have a microwave to pop in a little meal or run to McDonald's. I mean, you're making all of your food. So thinking, okay, I got to bake bread or I got to make a stew.
Yeah.
It's involved, but it's there's something very wholesome about
it. Definitely makes you appreciate what you have. More details on these programs and everything else going on in the month of December or November, not December yet. We're skipping ahead a little bit, but through the month of November on the Hancock Park District website. We've got that posted on our webpage.
Yep.
As well, again, Michelle Rumschlag with the Hancock Park District. Thanks very much for dropping by.
Thanks for having me.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. Our thanks to all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. That is goodmornings.net. You can also connect with us on social media. Sign up for our daily email newsletter. There's a link there to email us directly if there's something that you want to share with us that way. Again, goodmornings.net is our little corner of the World Wide Web. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.